Well, folks, it's great to have Dr. Kirk Elliott back with us once again. Always a treat for us, and just glad that you spend the time with us. You can go to andweknow.com/gold below this video. Just click on that link, and you will be able to have the same conversation I'm having with Dr. Kirk Elliott or a member of his team, and they will help you out, especially when it comes to precious metals, all the stuff we're seeing going on with gold and silver. Folks, you want to jump on board, that is for sure. Before we get started, I wanted to, on the money side, address something that came up, which I thought was a huge victory for us. The Arizona Supreme Court rules that a near total abortion ban from 1864 is enforceable, right? So that was a Tuesday ruling of last week, came out, and, it was standing that the criminalized abortion by making it a felony, punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison for anyone who performs or helps a woman obtain one. What did you think about that when you saw that news?
When I saw it, I said, amazing. That's just proof that God is still moving and active and alive in this world. And you know, I think the only exclusion was, you know, for the mother's life, right? If she's going to die. But what a huge step forward, massive step forward. When we live in a society where, I mean, I hate to say it so crass or vulgar, however you want to say it, but in Hollywood and everything else, kids seem to be dispensable, right? I mean, we live in a sick society, and now we see this start happening. It's like somebody cares about life. Somebody yep. cares about kids, in the pre-born kids. And it's like, this is yep. amazing. And it put a huge smile on my face.
Yeah. One of the things that I caught on to, many others, was that it actually happened, August 8th, right? Is where President Trump actually came out and said, thank you for this ruling. And it, and try to tell folks, like, don't live in fear with this, you know, thing that's going over. We see eclipses all the time. I think that the enemy found an opportunity to make fear out of it. That's why they said, oh, we're going to strike up CERN. We're going to send 3 rockets called Serpent, because they all, in my opinion, belong to the enemy. And so they found a way to try to put panic in everyone. Well, the panic is actually on their side, because I think there's the tide is turning, and I'm really excited about how that's playing out for all of us. So good news on that front. Now, some other things that have been going on, you had some news to share on several fronts. Where'd you want to start?
Well, I think I'd just like to start with the silver price action that we've seen over the last 60 days. So, you know, we've been having shows like on a weekly basis for like over a year, right? Mm-hmm. And silver goes up and it's come down, it goes up and it's come down. And we keep talking about the fundamentals and the driving forces behind gold and silver. And I've had people that would call and say, Kirk, it's not moving. It's not moving the way that you said that it would, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, be patient. Sometimes markets can stay irrational longer than we can stay rational, right? But when the fundamentals are there, truth is truth, right? Right. And it will come to pass. And so price action, you know, you look at when silver was, oh, this is many, many, many months ago, it was like $23 an ounce, and it was coming down a little bit. And we talked on the show, it's like, if it hits 22 is a major threshold, and it goes below that, well, it could have a tendency to keep going down for a while. But if it hits that and it bounces back up like a trampoline, that was a major support level. Well, that's exactly what it did, right? It hit 22, bounced back up. Now, we had a resistance level at 25. So why 25? 25 happened to be the 15-year moving average price of silver, like a long-term average, right? So it over the years, it hit 25, came down, hit 25, came down. It was like this ceiling that couldn't be broken. But if it breaks through it, that old ceiling becomes the new floor, right? Right. So what did we do? We broke through it in a big way. And so now silver is like $28, over $28 an ounce. Right this week. It's like, good grief. So not only did it bounce off of 22, blow through 25, or at 28. Well, you look at what it's done. Silver's up over 15% in the last 30 days. It's up over 24.4% in the last 60. In 60 days, it's up over 24%. So I was doing some research over the weekend, last weekend, and COMEX, which is kind of the global depository, the source for all gold and silver, where manufacturers, you know, buy their bars off of COMEX and everything. Over the last 18 months, LT, COMEX available inventories are down 70%. 70. So that means there's 30% left. Well, in over 18 months to come down 70%, that's a decline of inventory of 3.8% a month. So what's 30% that's left divided by 3.8? At current drawdown rates, COMEX global silver supplies will be gone in 8 to 9 months. Gone. Right. So what are the manufacturers going to do? And what's the driving force behind that? It's solar, it's electric vehicles, it's fuel cell technology, it's electronics, right? And that demand isn't diminishing even in a sluggish economy. So what we're seeing is silver probably is going to hit ridiculous highs, because we've got now the fundamental and technical confirmation happening at the same time. And so for everybody that's been patient over the last 12 months, it's like, oh my word, it's happening just like we said that it would, but we're not God. We don't control the markets. You know, sometimes things take a little bit longer than what we had hoped, because there's a lot of manipulation. But here's where I think the manipulation game is ending, because the new numbers that are coming out show that China is the massive owner of precious metals around the world, right? They like own the majority of metals, like the majority, over 50%, are owned by the Asian economies. I mean, mm-hmm. like, look at this chart here where gold is flowing east. China, 160 tons since April. India, Turkey, Thailand, Saudi Arabia, Malaysia, Hong Kong, right? So wealth is moving from the west to the east.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So here's where now that they own the majority, the west has lost its price setting capability, because London and New York could actually set the price when we were the majority owner. And because of the Western banking, they wanted to keep suppressing the price of gold and silver. Well, now that China owns the majority of it, mm-hmm. and what do they want to do? They want to back their new central bank digital currency with gold. Their motive is completely different than the West. They want the price to go through the roof, right? Because they're using it as their backing. So they don't have price suppression. That's not in their vocabulary. So now that they own the majority, I think this is a pendulum shifting moment, LT, where now that wealth has transferred from the West to the East in terms of gold and silver reallocation of the world, right? And they don't have price suppression as a rationale in their vocabulary, because they want it to just go through the roof, as they want to back their currency with it. This is a really interesting time. So with that being said, Congress is seeing the same chart that you're seeing, right? They're seeing this outflow. And so Congress sends a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, to the Fed and said, we want to know what countries are repatriating their gold and how much is going away.
Right.
Well, okay. So a congressional Freedom of Information request to the Fed. What did Jerome Powell do? He thumbed his nose at him basically and said, I'm not giving you that information. It's like, wow. What? It's like, whatever happened to the rule of law in America, LT? What happened to it? Because the Biden family gets FOIA requests often. It's like, senators get it. It's like, we're not going to comply. We're not going to give them what they ask, or we're not going to comply with a congressional subpoena. It's like, what do you mean? Is there no teeth to these requests anymore? People just don't seem to care. So what Jerome Powell said was, he said, well, you know, we're not going to give out that information. If you want it, go to the New York Fed, but they're not going to give you the information either. So he deflected and said, but they're not going to give it to you either. So they're just not giving it up. Why are they not wanting to give it up? Because of that chart that shows China plus 160 tons, America minus 130 something, right? It's like, wow, there is a mass exodus, a transfer of wealth from the West to the East. And the Fed doesn't want people to know what they don't have, right? Because it's going to expose the game. It's going to expose that they've lost.
Right. It's
going to expose that that China and the BRICS nations are winning. Mm. And they don't want the world to know that.
My goodness. I mean, this chart right here, when it talks about flow, net imported gold from the West since April, or can you explain a little bit more to me what this means? Does that mean that they're shipping golds from us to them, to China? Is that what it means?
So let's take China, for example.
Okay.
China is the largest mining country for gold on the planet. How much of that do they sell? None of it. They keep it all. They're also the largest purchaser of gold on the planet. So estimates are, if you look at like World Bank numbers, World Gold Council, they estimate that China has about 5,000 tons of gold. 5,000 tons. Okay. But they don't report the numbers. They tell the world what they want the world to hear, right? So when you are the largest gold mining country on the planet and you don't sell any of it, and you're also the largest purchaser of gold because they're keeping mountains of gold, estimates are now that they don't have 5,000 tons. They probably have about 30,000 tons.
Oh, wow. Gold.
Because these countries aren't reporting. They're not reporting the true measure. So what these numbers are showing is whatever gold that the mines in those countries produce, they're also importing X number of ounces. So like India's importing from another country those 80 tons, and Turkey 62 tons, and Thailand. And what is America doing? Minus, right? So we are, our gold stocks are diminishing where other countries are increasing. Mm-hmm. And this is the flow of what I would call wealth. So we need to stop thinking of wealth in terms of how many paper dollars do we have?
Right.
We need to start thinking of wealth and how many ounces of something that's true and something that's valuable do you control? Right. Because that's actually true wealth. So I was doing some math earlier today before we were recording, and okay, this is going to be interesting. Back in 1929, okay, 1929, gold was like $20.96 an ounce. And what was the average house price? It was $4,900 bucks. So it took about 230 ounces of gold to buy a house. Okay, fast forward to today. So with gold being $2,300 an ounce, roughly, times 230, that gets you, how many ounces it took to buy a house in 1929. So we'll take 230 ounces times today's price. That comes up to $555,000. The average home price in America is $389. So if you would have actually just kept those 239 ounces of gold from 1929, you could have gotten a house and had $171,000 left over. See, but if you would have just had $4,900, well, you can't buy anything with $4,900. You can't buy a house with $4,900 today, but your ounces of gold would still buy you the average price home in America, plus have $170,000 left over.
Oh, wow.
So this is where gold is going to maintain its purchasing power over time, which is why I say we need to start measuring our wealth and how many ounces we control, not how many paper dollars we have, right? Because 230 ounces of gold equaled $4,900 in 1929. 230 ounces of gold today equals what? It equals 555,000 dollars. I mean, this is, start looking at wealth as how much you can control. What is the real tangible value of what that gets you, right? And so here's where that to me is really important, because this is why the Fed basically said, we are not going to release that information, because it shows that America is on the road to serfdom, on the road to poverty, and where the East is on the road to wealth. Because look at all the gold that they own, and they know this, right? So with that, I you start to go down some rabbit trails, right? When you start to look at what the Fed is doing, what they're saying, what they're lying about. And so they're not going to comply with the FOIA request. But now I love it that there's infighting in the Fed. All right. LT, when you were a kid, did you ever watch I'm going to embarrass myself because my grandfather made me believe that professional wrestling was real. Okay. And so I'm as a kid, I'm like 9 years old. It's like, what? You know, that's real, grandpa. I said, yeah, it is. It's like, how many words? So silly, but you'd always have like these battle royales, right? Where all the wrestlers get in the ring and they all start beating up on the one guy that you thought was going to win. And you know, it's because the masses start beating up the one that, you right. know, he loses. Right. So this is how I view the Fed today. It's like the battle royale because Jerome Powell is out there and he spoke at Stanford last week and said, you know, I'm holding true to my course of action. We're going to have 2 to 3 rate cuts this year.
Right.
But then he kind of took a little sidestep and said, but you know, inflation is persisting, so we might have to adjust a little bit, but no, we're going to have 2 to 3 rate cuts because we won this battle against inflation and we're really good at what we do. Right. So that's kind of his mantra. So now you've got the Federal Reserve Board of Governors and these Federal Reserve presidents, because the Federal Reserve is a system of banks. You've got like the Kansas City Fed, the Dallas Fed, the Atlanta Fed, the Minneapolis Fed. You know, they've got a lot of Federal Reserve banks. And so their presidents are the ones that vote, you know, for the official Fed rulings. So listen to what they're saying. So Atlanta Fed President Bostic, mm-hmm. So he says, we're only going to see one rate cut this year, and it's going to occur in the fourth quarter. This is what I've been saying for months, is they're not going to have rate reductions because they can't, because they haven't won the battle against inflation, right? Mm-hmm. So if you lower rates in an inflationary period, inflation is going to persist even more because raising of rates is what slows down inflation. But if you raise rates when you've got debt up to our eyeballs, you're going to cause the biggest recession, depression in the history of America. So this is why they just sit there and they say, okay, we're going to pause this month. We're going to pause. They're not doing anything because they know either action is going to have a negative outcome, right? So they just do nothing, right? So we've talked about this. It's like they're going to do nothing for a while because they can't do either alternative. But if they do something, they might do one rate reduction because they want to save face, right? And this is what I've been saying for a while. And this is what the Atlanta Fed president says. We're going to do it in the fourth quarter. It's like, of course they are. Right before the election, you're going to lower rates so people think they're winning this job and they're doing something great and blah, blah, blah. Now, take Neil Kashkari. So he's the president of the Minneapolis Fed. So he says something different. He says, we're not going to have any rate reductions this year. We're not going to have any because we can't. We haven't won this war against inflation, right? So Kashkari is saying no rate reductions. This other guy from Atlanta says we're going to have one. Other Federal Reserve Bank presidents are saying the same thing. We're just going to have to pause for a while. We can't raise rates, can't lower them. And so there's this infighting where the people that are voting within the Fed system are deviating from Jerome Powell's political message of, yeah, we're going to have 2 to 3 because we've won. These people they want their jobs. They don't want to go out there looking stupid, right? So they're saying more of the truth than what Jerome Powell is saying. Now, there was an article this morning that I read that came out because the super core inflation numbers came out. Okay. So what's super core? So core inflation is everything that we buy minus housing and basically gas, right? So supercore takes out even rent, right? So the problem with supercore is it's gone up. It's gone up way more than what they thought, which is the staples of everything that we buy, food and things of that nature. And that's very sticky. And so what the problem is with supercore inflation going up is economists know that supercore inflation isn't really fixed with interest rate hikes. So So you if that inflation keeps persisting and you raise rates to slow down inflation, it's not going to stop super core inflation. So it's become tends to be very sticky, and it also becomes a structural part of the economy. Meaning, what they're so nervous about is that these numbers are going up and it's hard to fix them. We're probably going to be stuck with higher prices for quite some time. Again, this is what I've talked about for a decade, is inflation is not rising prices. Rising prices are a symptom of inflation. Inflation is nothing more than an increasing money supply. That's why it's structural. So you've got all this money that's floating around, and now they're starting to come out and saying, well, boy, this is a problem. This super core inflation, it's sticky. We don't know why it's sticky. It's like, I'll tell you why it's sticky. I'm an economist too. It's because you're printing money, right? And so I was looking at this chart a couple days ago, and because the employment numbers came out, and I was like, boy, employment's really good. This Biden economy, it's amazing. We're creating so many jobs, and this is ridiculously good. It's like, okay, you look at the jobs that were created, and if you look at a chart, part-time jobs going way up, full-time jobs coming way down. It's like, that's not real. That's not job growth. Mm-hmm. Because let me put it into perspective. Let's say that you were a software engineer at Microsoft, full-time job, making 180 grand a year and doing really great, and you lose your job. So you go out and you get a bunch of part-time jobs just to make ends meet, and you're flipping burgers at Wendy's, you're a greeter at Walmart, and you get a third job at Taco Bell just to try to feed the family, right? Well, you're only making half of what you used to make, but you're working three jobs and working your fingers to the bone, and there's not enough hours left in the day. So what does the job numbers tell us? The job numbers would say, in that situation, you lost one job, gained three, that's a plus two overall. So they would say they created two jobs, but it's like, wait a second, they're part-time jobs. Oh, it doesn't matter. They're only counting the number of jobs. What they need to count to have an accurate number is the economic output of those jobs, right? Mm. What is the net benefit to society? Because the net benefit to society on working three jobs means that those parents aren't with their kids.
Right.
It means that those parents don't have benefits and health benefits because they're all part-time jobs. It means that a societal decay is what that means. And so, but the Biden administration would say, we created two jobs. I just showed how that is absolutely detrimental to society, because they're not measuring the right thing. They're measuring the number of jobs, which some are part-time, not full-time, but they need to measure the economic output of those jobs to show if an economy is really in growth mode or shrinkage mode. So it's in shrinkage mode. So when you've got what's going on, this is how you can have increasing job numbers, but GDP that's coming down. This is where you can have wages that are coming down. This right. is where you can have profitability from companies that are coming down, because wait a second, jobs are going up. People should spend money. It's like, well, they are spending money, but they're barely making ends meet. And so the stock market is ultimately going to come down. See, this is the problem and why you can't take numbers the way that they're reported and assume for them to be 100% accurate.
That's right.
Right. So this is what's happening in our world right now. And so this is where the numbers are making things lie. And so this is proof in the pudding. The Biden administration is saying, look at all these jobs that are created. This is why we have inflation, because the economy is growing. See, a growing economy does bring inflation. That's actually kind of a healthy inflation, because people's wages can keep up with the inflated prices, and that means economic growth. But what we're seeing right now is inflation not being caused by job growth, but inflation being caused by a printing of money with job reduction, wage reduction. That's called stagnation, where you have lower economic output, but higher prices and people aren't working. That's like the Carter years, but right. now on steroids, right? And so this is the ugly reality of the world that we're living in, and it's only going to get worse. And this is why the Fed presidents at these banks are saying, we can't lower rates because we got to keep printing money. And the BRICS nations that are rising up that are really putting basically a monkey wrench into the system because mm-hmm. they took away the petrodollar.
Yep.
And the built-in demand for our currency, which means we're going to have to print even more. And here's the Fed thinking, wait, we got to print even more money, but that's going to cause more inflation. And we know that. But we can't raise interest rates to slow that down because that'll cause a depression. It's like, what do we do? Mm. This is what happens when you don't let normal market forces just play themselves out. And you try to pretend you're God and control the markets with interest rates and all this other stuff and what they're doing. And it's like, you know what, LT, we're going to have to face the music as a country. And what we can do to actually counteract that is allocate into physical metals, gold and silver, just like what China's doing, just like what India's doing, just like what that chart showed us, this wealth transfer from the West to the East. And I would put it into Christian terms. I'm not saying that these countries are evil or good, but you know what? I think there is going to be a wealth transfer from the wicked to the righteous, mm-hmm. right? And when you start to identify this Babylonian system, this evil money system that's based on debt, and we as believers, A, get out of debt, B, identify what's going on, C, act with wisdom and discernment and discretion and creativity and do the right thing and allocate into strength, we can have a smile on our face given the times that we're living in.
Right.
That's our goal and that's our motive in shouting this from the rooftop every single week is we can thrive even in the horrible economy that we've been talking about. It's how I can have a smile on my face. I've talked to you. It's how you can have a smile on your face because even though the world's getting darker, we know that there's solutions that we can take advantage of.
That's right. That's why it's amazing to see silver and gold go up. Of course, that's helping my IRA with you guys. So thankfully, we jumped on board when we did. And it's not too late, right? Anytime folks can give you a call, they can reach out to you and get that whole thing started. They can even ask all the questions that we can't cover here in just 20 to 30 minutes. So looking forward for more of you guys to go to amwayknow.com/gold in the description box below this video. All you have to do is reach out to Dr. Kirk Elliott and his team, and they will take you on a wonderful journey on what you can do through this crazy time that we live in. That's for sure.
Well, so it's my pleasure to help. It's my pleasure to be called and used and anointed to do this. And so it's a pleasure being with you every week, LT. I love helping all the End We Know viewers because it's just a blessing to us.
Yeah, they're amazing. And as we're looking forward to the cruise this August 11th through 18th. We're going to have Dr. Kirk Elliott with us, and it's going to be great to hear you talk to you on stage with so many folks. It's going to be great.
It's going to be fun. Can't wait.
All right. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good.